We're a bit outgunned, outmanned, outnumbered, but we're definitely not outplanned. So we got to work with the resources we have, knowing that we are kind of outspent with those competitive states, and be scrappy and smart and continue to push on those opportunities that Anna and Longwood's pointed out for us. I'm very excited about it.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of the Destination Marketing Podcast. I'm your host, Adam Stoker. We're still here at the Idaho Tourism Conference, and it has been a really, really fun event. We've got Jeremy Chase, who is the Marketing and Innovation Administrator at the Idaho Department of Commerce. And we've got Andrea Rayburn, and she is the Tourism Specialist over Content and Creative Strategy for the Idaho Department of Commerce. You guys, thank you for joining me today.
Thank you.
Yeah, I'm excited to chat with you. So, first of all, Idaho is a very, very special place for me. I've actually mentioned it on a couple of the previous interviews, but my family is from Eastern Idaho, a little town called Roberts, Idaho, that not many people know about, but you guys do, which is amazing. Andrea, did you know? Okay. Andrea knows about Roberts too. Population 400 when my dad lived there. I think if it's worked really hard over the years, it may have doubled to 800 since then. I come back every year. It's a really special place for me. We go on fishing trips up here. I've brought my kids up here. And Idaho, for me, I'm really happy to be here because Idaho's a special place, and you guys get to market Idaho every day. That's a pretty cool thing.
I would agree. And thank you for your kind words. It's great to have you here.
Well, thanks, Jeremy. And it's been fun to be here. Andrea, how long have you been here at the Idaho Department of Commerce?
8.5 years.
8.5 years. You've been marketing the state of Idaho for 8.5 years.
I'm very lucky. I'm also an Idaho native, born and raised. So it's an extra special treat to be able to share this beautiful state with everyone every day.
What part of Idaho?
Originally from Pocatello.
Okay. I like it. And Jeremy, where were you originally from?
Only 20 miles away from Pocatello in a small town called American Falls.
American Falls. Yep. And I know where both of those are. I'm proud of myself.
I hope so. Not terribly far from Roberts.
No, it's not. And I had family in Twin Falls. And if I remember correctly, American Falls is on the way to Twin Falls. Yes or no?
Depends on how you look at it.
Depends on where you're coming from.
Yeah. You know, if I'm heading west from American Falls, then Twin Falls would be the next city with falls in the title. Yeah. Okay. And if we want to go up north, we get to Post Falls. But that'd be a long way.
You've just gotten outside of my realm of expertise when you get to Post Falls.
That's all right. That's all right.
So let's start with you, Jeremy. Jeremy, you and I got to know each other many years ago. We were both in the Utah tourism scene. You were with several organizations. I shouldn't say several organizations, a couple organizations there. You've been in organizations in tourism in Idaho. Can we talk a little bit about your journey and maybe what led you to where you are today?
Goodness. Well, I will try to keep this brief, but I started my career in the late 90s at Drake Cooper. It was Elgin Cipher Drake when I first started there. And they were fortunate to have the Idaho Travel Council basically promoting tourism for the state as a flagship account. And I was able to start working on that account and did so for 12 years and had no intention of ever leaving and discovered my love for travel and tourism. But then folks in Utah just reached out to me out of the blue, and I felt for my life and career, it was a logical next step. So I went to Salt Lake, and that's where I met you and others, and worked with Utah State Tourism and a number of DMOs. And then 5 years ago, moved back here to be closer to family, because I have kids and most of their families here in the state. So yeah, returned to Drake for a little bit and then went to Love Communications in Salt Lake City. So the through line really, Adam, is Idaho, Utah, travel and tourism. And about 8 months ago, 9 months ago, I had the opportunity to leave my agency roots, and now I'm in the public sector with Andrea and a wonderful team, and I get to pinch myself every day because I'm doing what I love, and awesome. I get to do it with people that are wonderful. So
that's great. Yeah. And Andrea, what about you? What's your background?
I was a TV news producer for about 10 years. So I fell in love with creating stories and finding unique stories and people and places. And at the time I was looking for a change, I got unbelievably lucky that Visit Idaho was looking for someone to come in and create a program around content creation, influencer marketing, and that kind of strategy. And the stars aligned, and I was able to move into the team and start building out that program for the brand, which was unbelievable and has continued to be unbelievable through the process.
Great. And are you still in that role, or has your role expanded or evolved since then, since you came in?
It's evolved. It's evolved a lot. Initially, it started with just kind of that influencer marketing, content creator work. And then it expanded into the travel guide and redoing that as a book and kind of burning it to the ground and building it back up again. And then working on our campaign initiatives, and then now really digging into our cultural kind of initiatives as well as accessibility.
Great. I've got to imagine just the act of creating content over the last 8 years has evolved a ton. Is that fair to say?
Very much so. It's a monster that you sometimes don't know how to feed.
I like that. That's a good way to put it. Jeremy, let's go back to you for a second. And your background, I thought, was an interesting, path that brought you here. You had the opportunity to work on the agency side, which, you know, I'm from the agency side, so it always interests me when people have that agency background. The thing that I think is interesting, though, is you were from the outside looking in as you were working for a private organization that was serving a public organization in a couple of roles, and then came over to the government side. What I'm curious about on that is, how did your agency career prepare you for that? And then also, what challenges have you run into in maybe trying to be on the government side and having the private background?
That's a lot to think about there. I guess one thing right off the bat is I had the opportunity to get to work with good people like Andrea and Diane Norton and Nancy Richardson and Lori McConnell and others as my client before I am now in this role. So in some ways, I was prepared by knowing the people firsthand.
Yeah.
And that provided me great comfort because I knew they were all smart, wonderful people. And that was part of the allure of trying to be in this position. But more broadly speaking, I think it prepared me just so I think I could work better with the partners we have, and we're proud to work with Mad Media and Red Sky Public Relations. And I feel like I can empathize with them, and I know where they're coming from, I think, and I think they understand where I'm coming from, and I'm trying to do my best to articulate our team's needs, wants, et cetera, to them in a way that I hope is helpful. So I feel like I can, you know, not that there's any issues or problems already, but I feel like I can be the agency whisperer because that's where I've come from. So yeah, but otherwise it's been a fun transition, and, you know, but there's also the other things, you know, things move a little bit differently in state government. I'm getting used to that, but it's been a wonderful journey so far, learning every day.
So you really have the ability, it sounds like, because of that, to empathize with both sides of the table and kind of recognize the needs of both sides. I think that's valuable, especially in a partnership like an agency state DMO partnership.
Oh, gee, I hope so. Because, you know, at the end of the day, the only reason I have ever had any skosh of success is just communication and just making sure people are expressing their needs. And it's particularly in a business relationship to make sure that we're all headed in the right direction, or at least a commonly agreed to direction, successful or not. So yeah, I hope so. Yeah, but I've been enjoying it.
Great. And Andrea, why in the world would you advocate for bringing Jeremy back to the organization when you were finally rid of him before?
You know, sometimes it's just hard to get rid of a good thing. So he's been a fantastic leader and really, like he said, been a wonderful advocate for advancing our program and really pushing us to really redefine what the brand is and what we look like and how we're going to interface and what stories we're going to tell. So it's an exciting journey ahead for sure.
Great. I'm going to stick with you for a second, Andrea. I want to ask you, because you're in charge of content creation, you had the opportunity to be a part of my personal favorite tourism campaign that has ever existed, and that's the 18 Summers campaign. Was that campaign a content marketer's dream?
Well, that is going to be more in Jeremy's wheelhouse. I came on in the last 2 years of 18 Summers.
Okay. And so during those 2 years, maybe tell me the highlights from that time.
I think it was one of those really special things that it connects with people on a multitude of levels. And it connects with you in different stages of your life in different ways, which I think is so unique. Mm-hmm. And even now, it's still amazing to hear that it resonates and it has continued to linger and guide our partners in what they're doing because they felt that it was so impactful, which, again, not a lot of campaigns have those kind of legs.
Yeah, it's the only campaign, and I actually talk about this campaign fairly often. It's the only campaign that I've ever seen that made me want to be a better father because it connected with me on that level. And I think I'm just going to sit here and just tell you guys how much I love that campaign. But it really is. It's one of my absolute favorite tourism campaigns of all time. So kudos to you guys for working on it and putting it together. Jeremy, she said that it's more your department. I'd be curious to hear what it was like for you working on a campaign like that.
Oh, goodness. Well, you know, by the time I returned to Drake, I mean, the campaign had already been hatched. So, I mean, I got to just sort of, you know, ride the coattails of it, I suppose. But no, it was a pleasure to be part of it. And it got to evolve, you know, in the couple of years that I was able to work on it. And since then, of course, we've, you know, working with Madden and Red Sky, we've evolved the campaign in this past year, you know, to beyond words, which we're very, very proud of. And it too was nationally recognized.
Awesome.
with the Mercury Award, as 18 Summers was years ago. So we got a good track record here with state campaigns.
Well, and you really do. I mean, that's the thing that's really impressive to me about Idaho. I mean, it's one thing to have the assets that you guys have, but I actually think that your campaigns have done a really good job of gathering those assets and presenting them in such a way that it connects on an emotional level with the potential visitor. And I think that's really important when you're coming up with ideas and campaigns. So you must be doing something right.
We always hope so.
Yeah.
Andrea, I want to ask you, I'm here at the conference, and one of the things that I'm going to be talking about is content creation and specifically owned media content. I'm curious about your approach to content marketing, especially, I mean, you've got 8.5 years that you've been working for the state of Idaho and kind of crafting and building that message. How do you approach content marketing today?
So a lot of it, and we have this conversation a lot, is so what? Why do I care? What is that? How does that impact the traveler? So what? You have a mountain range. That's neat. So what? So really digging into those stories, obviously matching that with the data that we're seeing, identifying our deficits, identifying areas of growth and opportunity. But I've really focused on building a wider range of voices for who is here and what you can enjoy. For a while, when I stepped in, our team was writing and we didn't have the opportunity to bring in a lot of voices and a bunch of different narratives. So that has been fantastic to look at going from bringing in 2 to 3 to 40 creators a year to talk about what's here and what you have the opportunity to experience, whether it's indoors, whether it's outdoors, whether it's arts and culture, you have the opportunity to sample those. So what are those stories and why do I care?
So if I'm understanding you correctly, it started out with the team was kind of building all the content themselves. Mm-hmm. Now you've cast a wide net of content creators that you're bringing in and actually having them create the content when they're here?
Correct.
What's that transition been like to go from your team kind of being relied on for all of that content to let's leverage these other voices? Was that an easy sell to the management team? Was that something that kind of evolved slowly over time? How did you get to this point where you're doing so much work with other content creators?
It was a little bit of a bullet train, only because the space was growing so quickly and there was so much opportunity. But our management has always been really wonderful in supporting, okay, if you're ready to go after it, go after it. And so it was, okay, how many people can we get in per season? We've never really tackled our seasonality, so how many can we bring in then? All right, we need to talk about our family experiences. We need to talk about our backcountry. We have all these different sectors of experiences available. So let's start digging in. Let's give people valuable tools that they can take with them, which I love. Even now with Travel Guide, it's fun to interact with people who said, oh my gosh, I read the story and then I went and did it. And still, to have people take that with them and make it feel like it's something that they're capable of doing, it's an actionable experience, is very cool. And then again, we want to still surprise and delight people, right?
Yeah.
And one of the best things about working on this team is interacting with visitors who are like, I never knew. I'm so shocked. I can't believe this just happened here. This is a memory we'll have for our entire lives. We can't wait to come back and do it again. And so those special little moments, I think, continue to push us all to create in fun and new ways. And again, look for new narratives and new voices to share the story.
Great. So you've now mentioned twice the adventure guide And there's two things that I want to ask you about that. One is, I know there's a funny story that we probably need to recap here about the adventure guide. But two, you said you burned it to the ground and rebuilt it.
Yes.
And I would love to know, first of all, how did you decide to burn it to the ground and figuratively? And then what was the process like of rebuilding what a destination adventure guide should be? Because I think that sounds easy when you say it, like you say in such a quick sentence of, we burned it down and rebuilt it. That rebuilding process had to be wild.
It was. Again, a phenomenal management team that looked me in the face and said, if you think you can do it, go for it. But we had a traditional listings guide for a very, very long time. The content that was available was really limited to an introduction page that was an overview of the region. So the way that I kind of felt, it was giving our reader an ocean of information, and they had to hopefully land on the right tidbit in that to be hooked, to find something to dig into. So we have so much character within this state. It was like, let's highlight the characters. Let's give someone something to really hold on to and to lean into. So we decided to strip listings as a whole. I ordered travel guides from all over the world. I had about 100 at my house. Went through and looked at what was going on within the space, what people were creating, what was competitive, what people really wanted to see. And so our goal ultimately became creating a coffee table book that people would want to keep with them year after year. And that's the way that we've created the content and continue to do so, is that we want people to look forward to the book every year. But again, leaning into obviously the analytics about what we were seeing on search and that, but more so balancing the storylines between go here and do this, inspirational and aspirational, unique people, unique places. One of the things I'm most proud of this year is we have the largest section we've ever dedicated to winter. We have 14 pages of winter, which was really exciting because that's an area we have to grow in. And this year we were able to really hone in on three different stories. We have the story presented from Idahoans about why winter is special. So we have a professional skier who moved here from the Midwest, and she just shares her story of how Pebble Creek is one of the most undiscovered places in the U.S., that there's 20 minutes and she's out her front door skiing some of the best backcountry in the U.S., and nobody knows about it. Then we were also able to work with a local family who talk about the importance of being able to unplug and connect in Idaho's backcountry. And so they spent a couple days up in Idaho City in the backcountry yurts up there. And then we were able to work with Paralympian Muffy Davis and talk about accessibility and what winter recreation looks like for a community looking for different ways to access those experiences. So being able to highlight those stories has been a really special process. And I feel like really given depth to the book. In the previous years, we've done a really awesome work with some of the tribes and telling those cultural stories, highlighting tribal artists and music and art. And those were so wonderful to work on and be able to share stories that we previously hadn't been able to share in a format that existed.
Interesting. Okay, so as you talk about an adventure guide, I almost want to go back for all of our listeners and just talk about what the history of these adventure guides is, right? Because everybody wants equal representation in the guide. And what that's resulted in is most destinations only do a listing guide because there's so much real estate that needs to be given and given equally. And you guys, as you looked at that, said, instead of trying to strip it down and make it smaller, you said, no, let's expand it and make it a coffee table book, which is more expensive to create, which, by the way, I'm not disagreeing with you because I think that's exactly what people should be doing. But how did you get everyone on board to say, yes, we're going to spend the additional budget to create these because it's going to be a more valuable owned media asset as opposed to just this listing guide, a tourism yellow pages that really most adventure guides kind of started as?
One of the things that we did do is we did go ahead and in year one, so in 2019, we did create a separate listings only essentially book because we wanted to be able to prove to ourselves and to our partners where the value was, that people wanted the content more so than the listings. They wanted ideas of what to do when they were here and in market more so than they needed a listing of where to go stay that night, because that's all accessible at the tip of our fingers now on our phone. So we found, we put that together, and it only received about 1,100 downloads total over the course of the year. We had no requests for it versus the travel guide, which we print 115,000 copies of every year, disperse those internationally and domestically, and then do several thousand downloads a month as well.
Wow.
So the proof really was in the pudding at that point, that people were like, okay, the content is what we really want. We want the stories. Give me the list of those five beginner hikes in Stanley that I can go do in the Sawtooths versus here's the 22 hotels that might be an option when I'm traveling.
How exciting is that to have a hypothesis, kind of gear up, get everybody on board, and then it's like, yes, it actually happened the way I anticipated that it would happen.
It was pretty wild to see. Jeremy was at Drake Cooper at the time that we were redoing the book, so everybody kind of held on for dear life. You know, normally you have a team dedicated to this, and at the same time we were still running campaign. I was still running creator contracts and doing those processes. So everybody was very dedicated to really digging in and saying, okay, we're going to do this and we're going to do it right. Here we go.
Yeah.
So it was a spectacularly fun process to be part of.
Well, congrats. That's really cool to have you kind of go through that process, take a risk, and kind of see the fruits of that on the other side. Jeremy, let's bring it back to the conference a little bit here. You know, you've got basically almost the whole industry here. I'm sure there's a few people that couldn't make it, but for the most part, you've got the whole tourism industry in Idaho here, ready to learn, excited for the different speakers that are coming in. One of the speakers that you had come in was Longwoods, where Longwoods was talking about some of the research that they both have done and are preparing to do, including a resident sentiment survey. Do you want to talk a little bit about some of the things that that she presented today? And I can't remember her name. What was her name?
Anna Blunt.
Anna Blunt. That's yeah. Right. And some of the things that she presented that I thought were really interesting, kind of about where Idaho ranks among other states in the nation and things like that. But then, of course, the resident sentiment survey that's coming out.
Sure. You bet. So we've been working with Anna and Longwoods. Longer than when I started. But the image study, which is what Anna presented today first, was we had those results earlier in the spring. We thought it would be valuable to share with our industry here at the conference. Anyway, what I took away from it was the opportunity of a good way to benchmark how we are, you know, how are we performing relative to competition? What are the things that are, you know, really important to our visitors? But hold that thought. The first thing was that it proved out that our advertising was working. People resonated with the campaign with Beyond Words. It was having an impact. Anna talked about today reputational lift, which is basically comparing aware versus unaware with perceptions to Idaho and what, you know, those obviously that are exposed to our messages like us more, and they intend to visit, and that's what we like to see. They also boiled down a number of what they call hot buttons, which are things a little bit more nebulous, a little more on the emotional scale, like a fun place to visit, a good place for families, things of that nature. And we scored relatively well in those. However, compared to the competition, we still have a little bit of room to grow. Ultimately, though, as I look at it, on a lot of those attributes, you know, when we look at our competitive set with Montana, Wyoming, South Dakota, Utah, and Colorado, we're still in the business of building awareness. And I think it was one thing that Anna alluded to, but maybe not said as explicitly as I'm saying now. We have to continue to build awareness of Idaho as a vacation destination. And not to quote the Broadway play Hamilton, you know, we're a bit outgunned, outmanned, outnumbered, but we're definitely not outplanned. So we got to work with the resources we have, knowing that we are kind of outspent with those competitive states, and be scrappy and smart and continue to push on those opportunities that Anna and Longwoods pointed out for us, and very excited about it. So that's on the first side. Now, on the resident sentiment side.
Can I stop you real quick before
yes, you
dive into that?
Yeah.
One of the things that I thought was really interesting is, yes, awareness is an issue based on that study that they did, and yet the percentage increase in residents moving here compared to your competition is like skyrocket, right?
Yeah.
Like the amount of people moving to Idaho compared to your competing states is crazy. And so it makes me wonder with those two data points, right? That compared to your competition from a travel perspective, there's an awareness issue. And yet at the same time, you don't have an awareness issue with people wanting to move here and make it permanent, right? So how do you think about those two data points?
Yeah, no, I hear you on that. And sometimes our industry can, I think, be unfairly accused of, well, tourism, you're the reason why everyone is moving here. And I don't think it's never as simple as that. You know, there are a lot of factors that go into why people move. You know, most of them are related to things called jobs.
Right.
And I think that's the one thing that where Idaho was able to benefit from in the last few years is they realized that we do have a business friendly climate. You know, people did want to figure out, you know, they had the opportunity to be Zoom workers and work remote. So they maybe tried out, you know, coming out here and living and realize that I can work here and I can maybe move my business here. And yeah, maybe they complete the move. But it's, yeah, I mean, and the other part from a practical standpoint is as our population is growing, you know, we all know in this room, you know, visit friends and family is always going to be the top motivation for activities. And if you have more people here, then you're going to have an incremental growth in VFR anyway. Yeah. So yeah, but I will still bang the drum on awareness, particularly with the budgets that we have and the resources that we have. We got to be smart with our decision making and make sure we stay as top of mind as possible.
Well, and to support your point that you made earlier about people moving here for their jobs, job creation in Idaho compared to the competition was way up as well. And
absolutely,
that supports the hypothesis of that being one of the big attractions.
Absolutely. Yep.
Interesting.
Yeah, it's great. And then if you don't mind, I'll mention the second thing that Anna talked about was our resident sentiment study. This is something we've never done with the state of Idaho. So really excited about it. And it's a good time to do it, too. So, I mean, we've gone through a real, like everyone, a lot of changing times the last 3 years. And so it is officially open now, and people can see it at visitidaho.org/survey. But it's for Idaho residents only. So listeners out there from other states,
Of you in Alabama, just resist the urge to go take the survey.
Yes, resist the urge. You will be kicked out. But anyway, what it's going to share with us are people's opinions about tourism in Idaho. And it'll also be a bit of testing how much they really know or don't know about how the industry helps support the economy and how connected it is at a localized level. So it's a pretty, you know, I think it's about a 12, 15 minute survey or so. You know, you got to put some thought into it. And we're asking some really good questions. And I know the team, we're very excited, you know, anxious, but also excited not only to get the survey out, but to see the results, because I think there's a wonderful opportunity there that not only will it help evolve our marketing efforts, but one of our team efforts at Visit Idaho is about advocacy. Now, granted, we can't lobby because we're state government, but what we can do is, with the help of Longwoods and our partners, is help provide some of that information to our stakeholders about our tourism industry. And that's only going to be beneficial. So people understand, you know, we're the third largest industry in the state, and we're very, very proud of that. And we do have an impact at a localized level that people need to be reminded of.
Yeah. And basically what you're saying about your inability to lobby because you're a state organization.
That's right.
You can provide the data for a stakeholder to then do whatever
Absolutely.
Lobbying they need or want to do to improve
Yes.
the relationship with
Absolutely.
The political leaders in the industry.
And that would be the most appropriate role that we have, and the only role that we have. So we have the Idaho Lodging and Restaurant Association, which is our lobbyist and a wonderful organization. So we work closely with them, but we also want to make sure then, yeah, at a DMO level and other groups that, you know, we can be a conduit, or through Idaho Lodging Restaurant Association, be a conduit to provide information about why this industry is so important to our state, and that we continue to raise the banner high. So it's going to be exciting.
Let's talk about that survey. Resident sentiment surveys, I've seen tons of them, and I know you guys probably spent a lot of time preparing for this survey and making sure to get it right.
Yeah.
What are the key learnings you want from that? When you talk about resident sentiment, is it how do they feel towards the tourism economy as a whole? How do they feel towards specific visitation, specific groups? What are the questions that you're asking that's going to lead you to be able to action in your marketing?
I'm going to answer it this way, which is I've been able to see a couple other state sentiment studies that have done this. And what spooks me is, and Longwoods has shared this with us too, that there's a segment of respondents that have no opinion. Hmm. That's what keeps me, you know, sitting up straight in my chair, because that means they could be informed one way or the other. And obviously we want to make sure that we inform them in the way that they understand why tourism is important and not be informed or misinformed otherwise. So it's that segment, which they said it can be somewhere between 20 to 30%. People go, well, yeah, I guess, yeah, tourism's fine, but I don't really have anything, you know, I don't feel one way or the other about it. That's what makes me a little bit nervous.
Yeah, the scary thing about that is that they don't have an opinion yet.
You are right, good sir. Yeah. So that's how I'll answer that question.
Very interesting.
So it's really figuring out where that piece of pie is going to, you know, how big or how small that's going to be. And ultimately, as I've shared with the team and others, for me, the outcome is going to be the same regardless, which is this is the opportunity for us to help with our advocacy efforts through our partners.
Awesome.
So, yeah.
Great. Andrea, anything to add as far as from the conference so far, anything that stands out to you or anything that you want to highlight from even the resident sentiment survey or anything else?
I just think this conference is unique. We have a lot of really amazing players and stakeholders. And so getting everyone together to finally talk, you don't realize the magic that can happen in a room. We kind of forgot after 2 years of Zoom calls what happens when you have a conversation. And so seeing ideas percolate and people connect and go, oh my gosh, I can help you with that. I can help you succeed here. Again, it's just really fun to see and be a part of again.
Great. So for both of you, the thing that I'd like to maybe end with here is my listeners are destination marketers all over the world. What piece of advice, if you were going to kind of boil it down, the most important piece of advice that you could give somebody else trying to solve the same problems you are, tackle the same challenges you're tackling, what advice would you give them? Andrea, we're going to start with you.
I mean, again, it's somewhat cliche, but work smarter, not harder. One of the things that we've done in own content creation is really making sure that when we're working with creators, we're not buying one singular thing. It's not just an article. It's photography, it's B-roll, it's social stories, it's travel guide editorial. Buy a big old catalog. It helps diversify your brand. It helps build your asset catalog. It allows you to create content over and over and over again. In our case, as we always joke, if I were to get hit by a bus, I want to make sure that the team still has the opportunity to know what was going on and has the tools available to them to create what we need to create. So yeah, that would probably be my piece of advice.
I just learned so much about your value to the team by the way Jeremy flinched when you said if you got hit by a bus.
Please, do not go that route. No manifesting, nothing like that. No.
No, I actually really like what you said, though. The work smarter, not harder. Millions of dollars every year are wasted in the tourism industry by people creating pieces of content, one content piece at a time, instead of starting with a pillar and slicing that pillar into dozens of different pieces. It's maddening sometimes to watch the lack of efficiency there. So I think that's a great point that you make. Jeremy.
One of my favorite sayings, which is not mine, but it's from a, on the social media platform formerly known as Twitter, there's an account called Lee Klaus Beard.
The prince of social media,
there
if you
go.
Will.
But it's a saying, ground your brand in truth and then let your advertising take whatever flights of fancy you want. So for anyone in destination marketing, figure out the truth of your brand and work with your agency partners, work with your internal team and stakeholders, because at the end of the day, if you can really get your finger on what the truth is about your brand, then you're going to be able to differentiate. And then as the rest of the saying goes, that's where the flights of fancy come in, and but you're still grounded in truth. And I think it's a nice saying. It's harder to do, but I've always felt that was important. I will also say that on a more practical note, given that we're all travelers here in your audience, make sure or don't underestimate the value of omnidirectional wheels on your suitcase.
I didn't expect the advice to go that direction, but that's actually a critical piece of advice.
Yeah, you'd be surprised how many people don't have omnidirectional wheels when you go to the airport, and they're always frustrated when they're dragging their carry-on, you know? If you have omnidirectional, though, that means you can do a lot more things with it and not just worry about one line. Anyway, so I thought adding some practical advice would be helpful too, Adam.
Excellent. And it caught me off guard. That was great. You guys, if people want to learn more about your organization or you guys individually, what's the best way for them to do so?
Check us out online, visit idaho.org. You can find us on all of the relevant social media platforms as well. Check out what's going on. We push out content every day and work with creators who are helping us solidify a position as subject matter experts. So see what's cooking.
Great. Jeremy?
Well, This is why Andrea is an invaluable part of our team, because she does manage all of those aforementioned channels, and we are the better because of her expertise and her efforts, and I'm very grateful for that. So everything she said with an exclamation mark.
Perfect. You guys, thanks for a great event. Thanks for the opportunity to be here, not only speaking on stage, but also broadcasting my podcast from the event. And thank you for taking the time to spend with me here. It's been really great.
Thank you.
Thank you for being at iCourt 2023 in Lewiston, Idaho. Thanks, Adam.
I love it.